Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Sesternino back here with our episode recap for episode number 7 of Survivor Game Changers. And we have a lot to talk about today, and I'm very excited to have a guest back with me here in the studio. First time making an appearance on a recap episode of Survivor. We have from Millennials versus Gen X, the great Hannah Shapiro. Hannah, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yes, very nice to have you here. And this is something that had been in the works for a little bit. Sometimes we have a guest on and it's just great timing. But this was something that had been sort of in the works where Zeke had in, you know, messaging with him that given me a suggestion. Hey, you should get Hannah as the guest on this date. And I really was like, oh, my God. Zeke's getting voted out that episode. I went into it as like, all right, I'll talk to Hannah, but I can't believe Zeke just spoiled when he's going to get voted out. This is really, very upsetting that he's going to go out this week, but I'll talk to Hannah and I guess she'll explain it. And I was totally
more upsetting. Even.
My wheels were spinning in the wrong direction.
Yeah. No, Zeke asked me if I would come and speak to you. And of course I said yes. But yeah, this podcast was premeditated, like things on the show.
Yes, yes. So excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here.
In the studio. And I know that this is a little bit, you know, out of your comfort zone. So that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, no, I'm not a podcaster. I was not aware that podcasts could last more than 10 minutes. But now look at me. I'm on a podcast and I'm so excited.
Okay. Well, nice to have you here. Wish it was under happier circumstances for your great friend Zeke.
Yeah, I love Zeke. And I want to handle this with as much care and whatever level of expertise we bring, which is, you know, we're just trying to figure out what happened with everything.
None. Yeah.
I've got only a little bit more than you. So we can figure this out together.
And we didn't get a chance to talk to you after season 33, really, outside of the red carpet. So I figured that it'd be fun to catch up with that stuff. But of course, the thing everybody's talking about, big national news story, the whole episode from Tribal Council between Jeff Varner and Zeke. I did the know-it-alls with Steven after the episode last night, and then I had the opportunity to talk to a very, very down Jeff Varner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really is taking all of this pretty hard.
Yeah.
And he was almost seemingly in tears, you know, the whole time I talked to him. I listened to him do a few other exit interviews he's going through a thing.
Yeah, no, I've listened to some of his exit press. Like, this is an upsetting moment. I think Survivor at its best, and the thing that you love to podcast about is intense gameplay, meaningful relationships, all of that. I think last night was Survivor at its worst. And having to process that as a community, as fans of a show that we love, and having to process seeing Survivor and this moment be the lowest possible denominator of what it can be is upsetting, I think, for all involved. Yeah.
One of the things I thought that was interesting from the show at the end, and I forget the exact wording that Jeff Probst says, but he says, you know, this was a powerful night. And he also described it as a beautiful night.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as a beautiful experience in the sort of journey that Zeke has had to go through with this?
The wording of all of this is tricky, right? Because I think at its core, what Sarah said about the moment of that tribal being a malicious attack and it being an ugly moment of Survivor is very true. I think that the strength and brilliance that Zeke showed in the episode and the response of love from his tribe mates, especially Sarah Lucina's words, did represent a love that came out of a very ugly moment. I think it's complicated, and the wording about this will be discussed, I think, far beyond Survivor and in the weeks and months to come.
And that's almost exactly what Jeff said. He said, it's a complicated, beautiful night that will never be forgotten.
Aw, Probst and I think alike.
You guys are right there.
Oh, gosh. I miss Jeff Probst.
Simpatico.
Yeah, no, I think, it can't be described in one positive word, but you know, I've gotten to experience Zeke's brilliance on my season over the past couple of months, a bunch of months off my season. I love him dearly. He's one of my closest friends. And if anything in this moment, if there is any part of this moment that was beautiful, is that the world got to see how brilliant, how strong, how powerful Zeke is as a person in this moment. But, you know, it's tricky because it was a very ugly moment of television.
Okay, so everybody knows you and Zeke are great friends.
Yes.
You've been in contact with him for, you know, on the regular. And so you might be able to speak to his mindset sort of going into this and how he's coping. Are you comfortable like giving us any sort of an update?
It's so complicated because, you know, I've watched Zeke over the past couple of months work so hard to be prepared for this moment, because in this moment, and Zeke understands this, whether he wanted to or not, and this is not something he wanted, he represents an entire community of people and a very vulnerable community of people. Transgender people are often attacked. There's a history of attack against the transgender community. This is a very vulnerable population. Trans youth has a much higher suicide rate than the national average. And so Zeke knew all this going in. And I mean, Zeke said it in the episode. He said, I don't want to be a role model, but, you know, if someone can look at this and look up to me and my story, then that's what, you know, he becomes. And he's taken the role very seriously and worked really hard to be prepared to handle this moment eloquently, to speak about it with grace. And, you know, I've watched the work he's done over the past couple of months. You know, Zeke took the high road in that episode, and he continues to realize that he represents more than just this one attack.
And it's interesting to me because I feel like that this role that he's now been thrust in as somebody who is like that, you could place a face to a transgender person, and it's not just sort of like a blanket name that you can throw around, that I don't know if he's necessarily comfortable in that role or that was something that he wanted. To me, I feel like that he was a guy who really just wanted to go play Survivor. He's not a person who went out there seeking the fame and the notoriety of being a person in the public eye who was transgender.
Yeah, I mean, I think to most of the people on my season, and especially to Zeke and I are both super fans of Survivor. You know, we fell in love with Survivor the way most super fans do. You know, we love the mental manipulation, the gameplay, the testing yourself. You know, Zeke had no interest in going on and being some sort of stereotype or label. He just wanted to go play Survivor. He did not ask for this moment. But I think once he was thrust into the moment, you know, he takes the role very seriously.
Okay. I want to get your opinion on how this all unfolded last
night. All right,
let's
do it.
You had written an article that went live last night where you basically, I don't want to put the words in your mouth because I have them in front of me so I can.
Well, let's read the words into my mouth.
Yeah, we can quote you here.
All right, let's do it.
So in an article that you wrote for Mike.com.
All right.
You said, make no mistake, what Jeff Varner does to Zeke, outing him as trans without his consent, is no slip of the tongue. It's an attempt to humiliate him. You described it as an attack.
I think that there is a difference between intense gameplay, passionately playing, even feeling hurt by other players, and then, you know, the events that we saw last night. You know, my season of Survivor, when we played, there were moments of intensity in which people passionately argued for votes to get people out. People argued against me. Not everyone believed and saw what I was doing. But that's still Survivor at its best. And the reason I call it an attack is because I think last night and the personal level that things sunk to had nothing to do with the game. It had to do with humiliating someone, with feeling desperate and in a bad place and wanting to bring someone there. I don't think last night represents gameplay on any level, and I don't think it represents Survivor at its best. I think it's just an attack.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. In talking with Jeff this morning, he said that it was just something that ultimately he said in the heat of the moment. It was not a premeditated thing. I mean, is there like a sort of is there a middle ground between something that is an attack and something that ends up being sort of more accidental?
I have no interest in, you know, coming at Varner, personally attacking Varner in this moment. I think this moment is much more about Zeke and how incredible he is and how he handled the situation and how his trimates showed love. I don't feel that this was an accidental slip of the tongue. We see it throughout the episode. There is build up to this. This was something that was considered and dwelled on, and then this was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I starved for 39 days on an island. I know the level of sleep deprivation, of hunger, of desperation, and the points that you hit. This was day 17 after pizza.
I can understand that. And I agree that, you know, there is a choice that has to be made, I think, before you do this. I think that it's you certainly can say, boy, that was a bad choice and that was not something that I should have done. But I do think that there is a conscious decision that ends up getting made of I'm willing to pull the trigger on this. So sort of like I've sort of in my mind been thinking about it, like not so much in survivor terms, but almost like as a like in a election where, and I've seen this, like it's like a trope that we've seen in lots of different like political movies and TV shows where it's like you have some piece of information about the other candidate that it'll ruin them and they have to decide, do we put this out there? Can I live with myself if we put this sort of damning piece of information out there about the other candidate? And then usually on TV and in movies, the candidate says like, oh, no, I might win the election, but I can't go through with it. I can't put that out there. I can't live with my conscience.
I mean, it's hard for me to sit here. I'm, you know, I'm very biased. I love Zeke. He's one of my closest friends. And I'll talk about it later on the show. But, you know, Zeke has helped me through extremely difficult moments post-show, during the show. I know what it's like to become a two-dimensional character on TV, to have people feel like they have the right to comment on you and your choices that you make. So, you know, I don't think there's any reason for tweeting at someone or Instagramming at someone. But I'm also not going to sit here and pretend that this was some sort of accidental oopsie daisy thing, because it's not,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And I get that from you because Zeke is a close friend and something very bad happened to him and you're not comfortable with it. And you know, that you perhaps are even more angry than he might even be.
Well, you know,
you're more defensive of him than he mm-hmm. might be of himself.
Well, listen, I think it's jarring to watch your friend get attacked on national television. I think it's even more jarring to see someone who's usually so well-spoken, so engaged. As Jeff Probst said in the episode, he called Zeke in moments being on an island of his own, to see the hurt and the pain of a malicious attack on your friend on national television. It's really painful, not just, you know, for me, for all of Zeke's friends, for his family, for the community that he has sort of been thrust into the spotlight to represent. You know, I've gotten to meet Zeke's friends over the past bunch of months, and they're, you know, that he has a bunch of people who love him so dearly, and to have to watch their friend go through that, of course, there's going to be a response of pain and hurt and trying to figure out how this happened. Yeah.
So as a friend of Zeke and somebody who is obviously very concerned with his whole well-being, how do you feel like the show handled this whole ugly incident?
I think, first of all, I mean, and this is on a much lesser extent. I've watched Jeff Probst be an orchestra conductor during tribal councils, hours of tribal council. And he is brilliant in the way he peppers in questions and lets people speak. Of course, this is a much heightened tribal council. But, you know, Jeff doesn't go to Zeke until Zeke's ready. Jeff lets the moment happen. I think Jeff orchestrates, but also calls out things that need calling out. And, you know, the show seems to be giving Zeke a platform to speak his piece and his perspective. I love Survivor, and I think that this is sort of an unprecedented situation. And you watch as Jeff tries to navigate the trickiness of the situation, even in the exit press. You know, it's not a beautiful moment. You can't call it one thing. and just trying to navigate the language, trying to navigate the tribal. The show handles what is a really horrible moment, I think, the best that it can. But I'm also talking about the show as some sort of giant unit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are many layers to that.
So one of the criticisms that has really been talked about online and on social media is that, why did the show have to air all of this? And, you know, there are people that have different theories about things. And
Survivor fans have theories? No.
Yes, they have a lot of theories. And one of the things that has been floated about that I've seen in various places from a number of different people is this idea of that there was no vote at the tribal council. They didn't have them go vote. That people said that they could have, if they would have just had them go vote, they didn't have to put this in the show. They could have just cut around all of this ugliness. Jeff would be off the hook. Nobody would have had to have known. Zeke's privacy would have remained intact. But because Jeff told everybody, do we need to vote? Okay, everybody's in agreement about what's going on here. And that there was a motive there. Jeff did that intentionally. So after the fact, they couldn't say, hey, could we just cut this all out?
I mean, to address the not voting thing first, let's just start small in this conspiracy theory. I mean, I completely understand why they didn't vote. I mean, can you imagine the sort of having to go through the the ritual?
What is Zeke supposed to say when he votes for Varner? Like, holds up his piece of paper. I mean, who's Jeff Varner supposed to vote for?
I mean, that's the thing. And you know, like, God forbid that something goes awry and the vote isn't Varner. I mean, can you just imagine what happens if something twists and that's not what happens? I mean, there are so many reasons not to have a vote. I mean, we see this with Brandon Hance being just sort of removed. Okay, we're all good. Let's get this out. When moments transcend the game, it almost feels ridiculous and offensive to sort of go through the ritual of it all.
The pageantry. Like, we have something that's happening that's a real life event.
Right.
And then we're going to, okay, I'll go count. Let me go tally the votes now. I wonder who it's going
to
be.
I mean, I feel like if that had happened and they had to show that on any level, fans would have been upset about. I mean, I just feel like it would have read as offensive, especially since I really feel like this moment of television transcends Survivor itself. Like, I feel like it's become a bit of a cultural moment of television. And imagine if, you know, people who aren't familiar with Survivor then have to. I mean, it doesn't make sense to.
Right. We can yada yada things sometimes. That's okay.
Yeah.
And the idea of this sort of that this was all that Jeff knew, they could have cut it out, but then they would be in a bind and they'd have to air it. It's just, I reject that.
I think this conspiracy theory can be rejected.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, I know that you are just Zeke's friend and not necessarily his, spokesperson, but was Zeke okay with this being aired last night?
I'm not Zeke's spokesperson. It's tricky because when you go on Survivor, you sort of open the world up to whatever happens out there is what happens. I know that Zeke is getting to speak out the day after. And that's something he worked with the show to talk about. This happened at Tribal Council. This was a huge moment. Whether or not it airs on TV, it's a huge moment. I'll say in this situation, I don't feel comfortable probably completely answering that for Zeke because, yeah, I know it's crazy. I'm not his publicist.
Yes.
I'm just his best friend.
I thought you were. Get out of here.
I know. I know I wear a Zeke publicist shirt. And I have the hat that says I represent Zeke and everything I say
that's
is
fine,
official.
That's fine. And forgive me if I put you on the spot.
No, it's a fair question. I just, you know, there are certain parts of this story that I think are for Zeke to tell. And then certain parts that I think as his friend, I can give insight into.
Okay. So one other thing I've read and I've seen that for coming from different fans and also I've seen other survivors say this.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Yeah.
Zeke went on a TV show. Zeke went on Survivor knowingly. What did he think was going to happen? He signed his life away in that contract. How could he not expect this was going to happen to him?
So I think there are multiple levels to look at them. The first one is...
Jeff Varner is wrong. He shouldn't have done that, but come on. You know, Zeke knew what he was getting into when he went on the show a second time in addition to a first time.
Well, this is, like I said, this is an important thing to address on multiple levels. The first level being there's a history. I mean, and I am not an expert, so if I get any language wrong or anything like that, people are feel free to throw things at me online. But, you know, when all this was going down, I did do some research into the transgender community. I watched some documentaries, tried to educate myself to a certain level. And there is this sort of horrible assumption that if a transgender person like enters the spotlight in any way, that everyone feels that they have a right to their private information, to their gender history, to all these things that really nobody has a right to talk about or address. So the first thing is there's part of that sort of theory or whatever is the sort of offensive assumption that private information for a transgender person, the public suddenly deserves. And I think looking at that as a whole is the first place to look at it. Like, as I think the second thing to think about is just, you know, Zeke loves Survivor. Zeke went out and played Survivor without discussing this, which he had every right not to discuss. He played season 33. We had, you know, nobody harassed Zeke in any way. Nobody, this was never came up on season 33. He had 2 or 3 weeks before he went on 34. There was no reason Zeke thought this was going to become a thing. But, you know, Zeke also, and Zeke said it at Tribal. Zeke said, I was well aware coming on the show that this might become a part of my Survivor narrative. And he addressed the fact that, you know, this could become a thing. I think Zeke probably thought this would be a much smaller thing that would come out perhaps after he had been on the show but not talked about it. But there was no, it's unreasonable to tell Zeke that he should have expected this level of, you know, this sort of hateful reveal of this part of his life, you know, and yeah.
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think it's wrong to say that we're going to put these limits on a trans person to say, yes, you have your right to privacy as long as you stay in your house and nobody knows who you are. But hey, if you run for office, you know, if you write a book, if you do anything in the public eye, then we are, you know, there's an expectation you will be outed. If you know, your private information is now available to the general public.
Yeah, I'll also say this. I talked to Nick Adams, who works at GLAAD and works with people who either choose to tell their story as transgender people or something like this happens. And Nick told me, I asked him about, you know, the difference about, you know, coming out as gay versus coming out as trans, for instance. And he said that when a person comes out as gay, they're seen more authentically as themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, they're living a more authentic life. Whereas when someone comes out as trans, suddenly their identity is questioned. Suddenly they're, you know, an asterisk is put next to their name. Suddenly this is the thing before their name. And I think that's something that Zeke addressed really eloquently last night, which is that, you know, he did not want to be the like trans Survivor contestant. And, you know, he had every right not to lead with that or not to share that.
Yeah, I really take offense to that because I feel like it's almost like a blaming the victim mentality sort of where somebody, a crime is committed. Like, well, why was she there?
Right.
Why was he at that place at that time? I think that it's the wrong mentality to take.
I think luckily, you know, the response on social media has been so much love and so much support for Zeke. I mean, there's no need for victim blaming on any level. Zeke did not choose to be put in the situation he was in last night.
Okay. Can I give you another conspiracy theory that's out there?
Keep hitting me with conspiracy theories. This is why I'm here. I'm here just to talk about conspiracy theories.
All right. This one is kind of nutty, but that there are people who are saying, hey, the puzzle last night, the answer was metamorphosis. Don't tell me the show didn't know that we were going to have this happen. Mm-hmm. Why was that the puzzle?
There are just so many moving parts.
I mean, how many people are in on this? So who goes into John Kierhofer's office and like, okay, John,
here's what we're going to
do. Here's what's going on. Okay. So we've got a puzzle that's going to tie into what's going to happen at Tribal Council. Varner's going to out Zeke, change the pod. I know that there was some other, I know you already built this
thing. It was shipwreck before.
They
rearranged, the shipwreck letters to Metamorphosis.
It was going to be Scout Troop, and they repaint everything, and then also keep your fingers crossed that Zeke's team doesn't figure
this
out.
Was Haley in on it? Did she know? Because she did a little salute at the end.
And you have to tip off Haley.
Gotta tip off Haley. Cobra's in on it.
To get the word right. I mean, to me, this is laughable. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. number of, like, why? Why would, why, what, like, aren't you risking that if this
your
is
your show itself? I mean, here's the thing. There are certain rules with competition reality shows that are just in place to make them legal. I mean, this is like the same sort of thing where people tell me that they think I went to a hotel every night at mm-hmm. the end of the night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I lost 22 pounds.
But,
and they're like,
the people that have played the show are saying this is tied together. The puzzle pieces are tied to tribal council.
Well, us Survivor people were a really sane group of people. We're not overanalyzers. We're not neurotic. So, you know, everything we say is really truthful and really on point.
I mean, that's so silly. And how did they know that Zeke isn't going to solve? They had such a big lead.
Yeah, Ozzy with those dives, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's that to me, I think, is the kookiest of anything.
Well, I think we have to think about what the discussion after this episode becomes. I think the thing we're thinking about online after the episode in the coming weeks is, where is the focus? You know, is it on hurling stuff at Jeff Varner? Is it on conspiracy theories? Or is it a discussion of a very vulnerable community that got highlighted last night and just, you know, an incredible person that, you know, has sort of arisen as a spokesperson in the midst of it all. Mm-hmm. It's where does the discussion lead? What is it that you wanted to do moving forward?
Okay. Did you get a sense?
That wasn't English, was it?
Yeah, no, that was very good.
It's been a long week, Rob.
It's been a long week and a very emotional week for all of us involved with this. Can you talk a little bit more about the complicated nature of Zeke having to react to this, where he's not just somebody who's outed on television of that, you know, he has this issue that he's keeping private, that many people in his life don't know, America doesn't know, the other people don't know. But at the same time, he's also on a competition reality show while this is happening.
So this is something that I think is a complication that makes his reaction multi-layered. Zeke reacts by being strong, by representing an entire community of people. That's why he reacts how he reacts. But you also have to understand that Zeke is still in a game for $1 million. And part of the reason Zeke is so strong and brilliant is because he's still in it and he still wants to play to win. And so while I do believe there is forgiveness there, that he's not fabricating any sort of things that he said, by trying to calm his tribe mates and minimizing the moment, he's also trying to stay in the game and stay having the ability to win. I mean, you and Fishback talked about it on Know It Alls last night. Any story on Survivor threatens your ability to get to the end. The larger this moment becomes, the more difficult Zeke's path to Final Three becomes. And this is not at the forefront of, you know, his head, but I do think that the way he responds, the hug, there are certain things that need to be put in the context of the fact that he's still in a game for $1 million.
Right. And we touched on this last night of you become too much of a hero in that moment. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to vote you out. Conversely, you lose your temper, whether you get angry or, I mean, if Zeke had some sort of a breakdown like we saw with Debbie 2 weeks ago, everybody's like, oh, Zeke's got to go next. He's lost it. He's got to be the next one to go. We can't trust Zeke anymore. So that's something that I just didn't even think about last night mm-hmm. in terms of, how much is he internalizing, okay, not only is the world watching me right now, but these other people, I still have to go and play the game and they're going to judge me as an alliance partner based on how I react in this moment.
As an alliance partner, Zeke had the ability in that moment to define what that moment was. You know, Jeff Varner does this thing, you felt the chaos, the upset, Zeke becomes the calm that sort of turns the moment around and calms everyone down. And I do believe there is truth in his words and in the calming moment. But every way you react on Survivor is colored a bit by the fact that you were playing a game for $1 million. There are ways that I would react to things on my season. In my head, I was well aware that this is also a game. I think that's what's so tricky about this moment. It both breaks the flow of the game and is still very much in the game. Yeah. We are still in a game of Survivor, as upsetting and as jarring as this moment is. Which is why I think it's so great that Zeke can speak out now, that Zeke is writing pieces and able to tell his perspective on what happened beyond just what we got to see on TV.
Of the other tribe mates that were there, who impressed you the most with how they handled themselves at that tribal council?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to say, I think his entire tribe coming to his defense the way...
Even Debbie.
Debbie was, you know, very passionate and angry, and it made sense in this context. You know, the emotion we saw on Andrea's face. I mean, I just, as a whole, that tribe really handled the moment and didn't buy into the hateful rhetoric we saw. But, you know, I really feel like Sarah Lucina stole the moment. There can be whatever argument that she made, you know, she spoke about it in the context to her own story. But I really felt like Sarah both expressed love for Zeke while staying strong about an issue she formerly had no experience with. I mean, she was able to be strong and define the moment in a way that, you know, maybe Zeke wasn't even allowed to in that moment because of the role he played in it. I also think, you know, Sarah speaks to a certain portion of the country who, you know, maybe doesn't have experience with the sort of diversity that, you know, some of us New York Jews have experience with. No, that's not the way you should phrase that. Okay, maybe I just stop. Like, hold on.
I think people are getting the idea of what you're saying, but
yeah. I think that Sarah speaks to a certain portion of the country that may have not, like she said, experienced certain kinds of diversity. And I found her response to be very honest and empathetic. And, you know, as a friend of Zeke, and I may or may not have told her this off cameras, you know, I'm so thankful that she was there to show him love and be there in that moment. You know, like, Sarah's a Midwestern cop who goes to shooting ranges. I know, because I've spoken to her while she's at a shooting range. And I just think she was, I think she was brilliant.
Right. And that's the hope, right?
That was a long answer, wasn't that?
The people who just have a misconception about what a trans person is, what their motives are, you know, there's a lot of, you know, things. I've seen memes on Facebook about, like, you know, people with going back to the bathroom bills and stuff like that of, you know, what are they up to? Is there some sort of, like, going back to this idea that Jeff originally raised of deceptiveness, and to have put a face on it, like, oh, okay, well, now I sort of, like, I know Zeke, I like Zeke. It changes people's perception of what that is, hopefully. And Sarah, I thought what I really liked about her was she was that person, and hopefully there's many more people who watch that and got that from the episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's why sort of Survivor brilliantly and horribly sometimes is a representation and a heightened representation of society. I mean, you bring up bathroom bills. We see fear-mongering and hateful rhetoric used for things like these so-called bathroom bills. But, you know, the North Carolina bathroom bill included way more than just bathroom policing. It included minimum wage stuff. It included discrimination on many levels. But politicians use this sort of, like, this sort of, like, fear about trans people to try to get what they wanted. I'm not sure last night whether or not these politicians believed what they were saying or not. You know, whether or not Jeff Varner believed what he was saying or not, he was trying to use some part of this to get what he wanted. There are so many parallels in Survivor between real life, both in the beauty and in the, like, again, ugliness of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I hope that, you know, there is a good lesson that is, there's an education that's going on for people that are not hyper aware of these issues, and hopefully that that is the good that comes that comes out of this ugliness.
I mean, because I think most of the country, you know, met Zeke in the way Sarah met Zeke, which is how Zeke wanted people to meet him, which is here's this person who is funny, who is a game player, who, like he said, started two fires with just bamboo. Being trans is not the most interesting thing about Zeke. It's not the defining thing about Zeke. It is a part of his history and a part of who he is. But to get to meet Zeke for the many amazing things that he brings to the table and then find out this and then to find this out, instead of letting this sort of label color how people see Zeke, maybe their perspective on the transgender community can change because of, you know, it's almost the flip of that, the reverse of letting a label change him. It's more like he was able to change this, hopefully, this perception of this community.
And just from the reality TV community with these podcasts that we do, Big Brother 17 had the first transgender Big Brother contestant.
I only watch shows on islands.
Okay, well, let me, well, I can tell you. And it was that her name is Audrey, and she turned out to be a very exciting character on that show as well. But it was really, you know, from almost like it was like a game mechanic of like, oh, we've got a twist this season that here we have our first trans. And it was celebrated by the show. And hey, this is great. She's going to be in there. But I definitely get the sense from Zeke that this is not what he wanted. He did not want the talking point to be like, hey, millennials versus Gen X. And guess what? There's also going to be our first transgender contestant is also going to be on the show. That's not what he was seeking from this experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think people at home have got to relate on some level to if they want to go experience something, they don't want some private information to be the defining thing about them. I mean, we talked about this, you know, there's no reason that this had to be any sort of large part of his story. You know, Zeke is one of the like funniest, best people I've ever met. And there's, you know, that's how he wanted to play Survivor, not with some sort of like exploitative asterisk to his name.
Okay. Let's talk.
But again, I'm not Zeke's spokesperson.
Yes, I got
not his publicist.
I understand that. And it would be a disservice to say that you could, you know, articulate what he's feeling as
yeah,
well. As he
yeah,
can.
I can only as a friend.
Yes. So let's change the subject a little bit and let's talk about what was going on at the other tribe.
Let's do it.
Because there was a little bit of a conversation about how the game changes you. And I think this does relate to the other stuff to a degree. Back in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, you were the person who you were having panic attacks, just watching challenges. You went through a lot of, you know, discussed a lot your anxiety on the show. You came through it. Did you feel like that Survivor was an experience that changed you as a person?
I think there's no way that Survivor doesn't change you in some definitive, fundamental ways. I think both the experience of having the adventure of playing Survivor, of really stripping yourself of everything that's familiar, of love, of people without ulterior motives, of food, of sleep, that itself changes you. Coming back from that experience and processing this unique experience, and then even the added experience of watching it all back on television and having this sort of high magnitude of commentary on your character has you grow and change. I mean, I found Aubrey's, in an episode where there was so much to discuss, I thought Aubrey's confessional about people at home not quite understanding why she was different was such a sort of like powerful precursor to everything that then followed. You know, I played 39 days of this game that is intense and testing. And, you know, part of the reason Zeke and I are so close is that we got off of this island and we had this experience of being, obviously on no level compared to what happened to Zeke, but we both had this experience of being vulnerable on national television, of going through this sort of intense experience and trying to come out the other side a better person. There was a lot of discussion of what Survivor, the impact Survivor has on people, you know, with Brad finally understanding his wife and his tattoo.
Yeah. That Brad only went 12 days last time.
Now he's at 17.
Now he realizes how much harder it is.
5 days later, and him and his wife are going to have much better sex. I can't say
Whoa.
That.
Whoa. Impossible. That. Impossible, probably.
Wait, that could be edited out.
Is that what you want?
I don't know.
Okay. Inappropriate? I think it's fine.
Okay,
I think you're fine. So in terms of survivors relating to other survivors, I mean, how much I know, obviously, you're close with Zeke. I mean, how much do you seek the counsel from other survivors to sort of process the experience that you go through?
You know, Jeff Probst tells you right before you go out, right before you maroon on the beach. Yeah. He says, this is going to become your dysfunctional family. You're going to hate each other. You're going to love each other, but you're going to become a family because you're going to have experienced this together. And it's so true. You really do become a family. And there was a difference, I feel like, on season 33 than 34 from what I'm seeing. And the difference was this. You know, we played really hard. I mean, I think you can tell from our season. We played hard. We played cutthroat. We blindsided each other. We turned on each other. You know, there was some level of hurt there. But we also sort of played with a level of camaraderie and love. I mean, Jeff Probst would comment, we would all hug each other after the challenges.
Yeah.
We knew we needed each other to get through the experience on the island and the experience off the island. There was a sort of sportsmanship there. And I think I'm very thankful that I was a part of a season in which that was the case. I think the nastiness that we saw at Tribal Council last night, there's no excuse for it and there's no reason, but I do think you can see throughout the season that I think it's important that Varner was witness to the JT tribal, you know? There was a different level of what was happening on that season. Yeah, I mean, we see, you know, we see glimpses of it that, you know, the sort of camaraderie and sportsmanship of season 33 is a little bit tested in the personal attacks of season 34. You know, there's a different feeling. I don't know if it's, you know, returning players who, I mean, I know with returning players, you come in with all this game regret. You've also seen yourself on TV and that changes everything. I will say this, what we saw last night doesn't happen on season 33. It just doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I think that you do bring up a good point about how the first time seasons, you know, those are the dysfunctional families of this show. I think there's very few people that have like ended up making bonds on an all-star season and then they go on to be great friends, like almost I think pretty much every single one of them. Maybe the fans versus favorites ones like might have that a little bit. But in terms of like, you know, all stars, there's not really a lot of people that are close friends from that, and heroes versus villains and even Cambodia, not really the case, where it's just that you have these people that you went out and you did this for the first time and it's like summer camp. And these are the people that can relate to the experience that you had. You're all strangers. Everybody is sort of on the same footing. And then in terms of the all-stars, you know, you realize like, oh, okay, well, these are the other competitors. And it's not, you don't look at them as, oh, these are the same people that I'm going through this experience with. These are the people that are blocking me from fulfilling my destiny of winning the game on my return.
I think that you're the expert on this as, you know, having played on a returning season. But what you're saying, I think, feels like it would be accurate.
I mean Rob and Amber are an exception to that.
Yeah, I mean, I am not an expert on returning seasons.
But for the cast as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like, you know, I think about the level of game regret and sort of replay that I had in my head and the perceptions that I like changed about myself, just watching myself back on television and all the sort of things that would go into a returning season. There is something, and I'm not saying there can't be nastiness on a new player season. We see it in Worlds Apart. We saw it a little in Koh Rong. But I do think that there feels like there's a different vibe. But you're the expert, Rob. You're a all-star.
Yes.
You're the ultimate. Once by that,
much like Brad Culpepper, I went 12 days and it wasn't as hard as the time I went
longer.
If
you had been to 17 days, you would have felt it.
Yes, I would have known
that season.
Then I would have known what it was like to go through it. Somebody that you played with the whole way through, the whole time that she was in the game, was Mikaela back in season 33. We haven't seen a ton of Mikaela this season outside of that JT boot.
Yes.
What have you thought about the second go-round for Mikaela so far?
I think this go-round, you're seeing a lot more of the sides of Mikaela that there are. I felt like in Millennials versus Gen X, I played with two different versions of Mikaela. And I'll preface this all with, I love Mikaela. When I got out of the game on day 39, I found a note at Ponderosa that said, yes. Hannah, I love you. I hope you kick ass. I've told this story before. But, you know, Mikaela and I have remained friends. There were multiple versions of Mikaela on Survivor 33 I played with. The one we're seeing on this season is more the first version that I played with on the Millennial Beach. You know, Mikaela made herself a very quick target on Millennials, on the Millennial camp. You don't see it as much. It's not shown as much our season. I think because Millennials don't go to Tribal a lot. There was a lot going on with, you know, Figgy and Taylor sticking their tongues down each other's throats and a lot of things that were happening. And, you know, that Mikaela, the sort of not able to, and she'll say this herself, the Mikaela that like doesn't control her facial expressions or how she feels is the sort of version of her that gets her in trouble. I also, on Ikabula, the swap tribe we were on, played with a version of Mikaela who was, you know, funny and intuitive, and, you know, was willing to sit us all down and play with rocks on a boulder. And I really enjoyed the Mikaela I played with on the swap beach. You know, her and I both had plans going into the merge of that season. But yeah, I think we're seeing a lot more sides of who Mikaela is.
Okay.
Did that make any sense or was that just complete bullcrap?
I think if I'm reading between the lines, I think you're saying that there were times that you really enjoyed her company in Millennials versus Gen X, and you are not seeing much of that Mikaela so far in season 34. You're seeing more of the harder edge of Mikaela.
Listen, I think that there are moments that are funny. I think that Mikaela is a queen in her confessionals. I mean, she is hilarious. She is pointed. She is everything you want her to be. Yeah, Mikaela is incredibly funny and engaging in confessionals. I think that, you know, taking out a cup of tea is just such a moment of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that there's also, you have to play Survivor with a sort of emotional intuitiveness that we're not seeing as much from Mikaela this season, I would argue.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit Millennials versus Gen X.
Let's do it. I've never talked about it.
Let's talk a little bit about it. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about with the combined tribal council a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. about how everything, you know, they started off with all of this whispering. And I was going back to that tribal council, that first tribal council that you went to in Millennials versus Gen X, when we have Michelle starts like whispering in your ear about, hey, change the vote. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me. Vote for Mari. Just do it. Just do it. You have that moment where you go into the tribal council booth and you're going on for, you know, I've heard 15 minutes even of you being in the booth. Can you just take us through the first person account of that and just give us your story of that tribal council?
Happily. First of all, this is very funny because I have not talked about, I don't go on podcasts.
I know. I feel like I have you here.
Exclusive about, no, it's so funny because I think when I wrapped the season, I very specifically didn't want to go back and do any sort of, I know a lot of times when people go back after their season, there's a sort of revisionist history there. But no, I'm happy to talk about the season, happy to talk about me and Zeke more, but let's talk about Tribal. I will do it, right?
And also just as a overarching note that I get the sense in talking to you that you didn't love the ongoing commentary, not specifically from me, but like from the, you know, what is it? The Greek chorus of the, all the different people on social media. And so like, all the people that are in the peanut gallery during the Survivor season.
I love the Survivor fans. I think they're funny and intuitive and great. And I think that, listen, I'm writing recaps this season. I think there's a way to discuss and talk about the show that is funny, sometimes pointed, interesting, talking about gameplay. I think that there's a small percentage of Survivor commentary that is just kind of, it's just mean for the sake of being mean. It's not clever. It's not about gameplay. And I think that small percentage of Survivor commentary feels much larger when you're a player on the season.
Right.
And I think I definitely had moments where I felt the impact of that. I know that there are certain past players whose commentary I encountered that felt much more like they were dealing with their own game regret, and it was coming out in their interpretation of what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a small percentage. But let's talk about the Maracaibo. Yeah.
And my rule that I try to live by with this stuff is to try to podcast like the person you're talking about is listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that often that keeps me out of trouble. Especially of late, I've really been running into a cult streak of different people from these reality shows, not thrilled with what I have to say. But that's where I try to come from.
Rob, you're an analytical Jew. I'm down with you.
Yes.
I have no hate here. But the Mari thing, it's interesting because it's so cool to be able to talk about it finally. There is a sort of relief about it. No, I had sort of a quote unquote growth edit, right, throughout my season.
Sure.
You could argue, I started those first couple days, every time the cool kids would strategize, they would cut to me alone holding a leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they really, I think, wanted to illustrate a sort of growth. And there was that growth. But I also think that certain parts were missing because, you know, all the shots of me holding a leaf alone were so important. Going into that tribal, Mari and I only had one conversation about strategy. I think a fault that Mari is now a good friend of mine. I actually watched episode one with Mari. Mari's the coolest chick I've ever met. But, you know, Mari and I only had one strategic conversation, and that's the conversation they showed. My two closest allies going into that first tribal council were Zeke and Michelle, because I saw that there were two groups forming. There was the Michelle, Will was much more in with them than you saw. Michelle, Will, Jay, Figgy group. There was Zeke, Adam, Mari, sort of Michaela. I saw these two groups forming. I know that for my archetype on this show and for my character, Sierra said it this season, my game doesn't really start till the merge in many ways. I knew if I ended up on the bottom of the numbers, if you're on the bottom and you don't have huge muscles, you become a target. So I wanted a foot in both doors. So Michelle and I would have long conversations on the beach. We would, we called it prayer time. I'm a Jew, but you know, I put my hands together and prayed quite a lot out there.
Did you literally pray or you called it prayer time?
We called it prayer time. I was very open with Michelle that, you know, I'm Jewish, but some of this comes from a truthful place. Faith is fascinating to me. And Michelle really enjoyed talking about faith.
Appropriately this week with Passover and Easter coming up.
Happy Passover to everyone. So Michelle and I had a very deep relationship. Zeke and I had an instantly close relationship. A huge story that you miss my season is that, you know, Zeke approached me day one of the game and was like, hey, you want to run the game together? And I was like, yeah, definitely. Sounds fun. I expected to get on an island and be with a bunch of conservative farmers. I found Zeke. And Zeke and I both do comedy in some similar theaters. So I had, you know, Zeke on one end, I had Michelle on the other. So I felt like no matter which way the vote was going, I would end up in the majority. And I see Survivor as a game of, it's different phases. Phase one for a character like me is to stay in the majority. And so my only goal, you know, I tried to build a relationship with every single person on that beach, but you know, those were my two allies. I knew something was up before that tribal. I looked down at the beach and I saw Michaela, Jay, and Figgy. And I thought, this isn't good if Michaela and Figgy are solving their issues. I remember Michelle was trying to sort of solve the issues with Figgy and Michaela. And I was like, guys, stop, stop. I knew something was up. I was like, something feels wrong. And then we got into that tribal council. And, you know, similar to any super fan, I was geeking out over being in tribal council, nervous that I'd be the first one off my tribe. But when Michelle told me the vote, I knew Will was with them. And so the whole tribal was spent trying to figure out if Michaela had flipped. But I saw it a lot more clearly than I think people realize. It wasn't blind faith in Michelle. It was very intentional. I had set up an ally in both camp. Mari and I, well, very close on a personal level out there. I didn't know even where Mari's head was at fully going into that tribal. In fact, in a confessional right before that didn't air, I was asked, like, is there any last thoughts? And I said, I don't know where Mari's head is at. Is she with the boys? You know, I understand the way it came off. I think my mistake in that moment, which I'm sure was pointed out, was I was starting, it's sort of a mistake I made throughout my season, which was perception is reality out there. No matter how many moves you're making, no matter what you're doing, what you're saying, perception is reality. By standing in that voting booth for 15 minutes, the perception...
Was it actually 15 minutes?
It was pretty long, Rob. Well, because what I was trying to do in there, I was trying to count to... I was like, who... Because I didn't want to be the vote that made that decision, because I would rather Figgy have gone home than Mari in a hot sec. But no, I was really trying to figure out what the vote was. And that was the first moment in which I didn't have other things going on, because Jeff kept asking me questions and I kept having to try to answer it while trying to figure out the vote. And that was the first time I was able to take a breath and figure that out. It's a lot more complicated than it seemed.
Did you reach the decision that you felt comfortable with, or you just felt like you ran out of time?
I decided that my gut was telling me they had the numbers. My gut was saying, I think they have the numbers, and I really wanted to vote in the majority. And I felt like I this is credit to Michelle's gameplay. I mean, this is credit to Michelle. Like, I really felt like Michelle and I were very close, much closer than it would appear on TV. And I took the risk to vote in the majority. And while I got a lot of online hate for that, I mean, Mara's a YouTube star. I mean, that week was the week I had to delete Instagram comments because I got so many swear words about myself.
Yeah.
You know, that was, there are moves I regret, I promise you, and that I have dwelled over. This is not one of them. I wanted to vote in the majority, because imagine if I had ended up on the bottom with Zeke and Adam, you know, Zeke, who's this puzzle guy, Adam with his idol, and me, who do you think gets targeted? I mean, you have to take it with the perspective of, I have to only play with what I'm allowed to play with. And majority is the first phase of the game for me.
Okay. You said that there
are... Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very impressed with your analysis of all of that. You said there are moves that you regret in that game. Can you talk to us about some of them?
Well, listen, I think that the overall regret is that, again, like I just said, perception is reality. There were ways in which I would act goofy, silly, that were able to cover my tracks of the things that I was doing. But then you get out of the game and someone like Chris says in his exit press, like, you know, Hannah was just doing whatever Zeke says, or she was just goofball. I'm like, oh no, I wanted you to think that so I could make the moves that I wanted to make. I wish that I had taken into account a sort of communication with the jury, a communication with the people I was sending home. I think something Adam did well is he communicated to the people he was about to vote off the work he was doing, where I was really covering the work I was doing. I also think...
Is that a flaw of you, or is that a flaw of the people that were being voted out to not recognize what you were doing?
I think it's a combination of many things. I think that there is definitely, and I think I talked about this in some of my exit press, there is a sort of level of gender bias in Survivor. I think we see it, you know, throughout the history of Survivor, that when, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, Michelle's question to Adam, I don't remember if it got aired, was, I don't know what moves you made, but you seem strategic.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is what it is. It's, you know, Adam, I don't really know what vote you pulled together, but, you know, you seem strategic. I wish I had taken more into account what perception was. And I think that that's a huge mistake I made. Do I have a minute, specific move? If I had just done this, then this would have happened. Yeah, of course I do. I think I wish I had... See, this is why I don't go on podcasts. I think there are, I think that I would have done better. I think going into the game, I knew about certain perceptions and certainly ways in which people were perceived. And I wish I had perhaps positioned myself next to a third person who was also perceived in certain ways. With that said, you step on a stick and everything's different. There's no point in having nightmares over one or two moves.
Do you feel like that? If
was
you
that
were,
okay?
Yes,
or was
it's
that
great.
Dodgy?
No, very good. Do you feel like that if you were going to play a second time, that you would be able to change that about yourself? Or do you feel like that it would maybe in some way end up being an asset where people aren't targeting you because you don't come into a second game as potentially somebody who has the reputation of somebody who's going to be like a person who's running the game?
First of all, I'm really enjoying my life off islands. I think I'm going to keep living off islands
for
a long time.
You're not dying to do Survivor again.
You know, I think I'm really, I have certain goals in my life that I want to pursue in the meantime. I know the correct answer is in a heartbeat, put me on a plane.
I don't say that.
But, you know, there's just so many things I want to do in my life that are not on an island. I think going into a returning player season is much more complicated. You have to think about how you'll be perceived. You have to play either into your reputation or against it. There's, you know, so many moving parts of a returning player season that there would be so many things to think about. I mean, we see it this season in 34, you know, like there are certain people that because of their reputation are doing better than others. Saree does her best, but three or four conversations that she has in a row, people go, but I know Saree's reputation. Whereas, you know, like Sarah was the trusting cop her season, and she said she wants to play like a criminal, but people are going off reputation, you know?
Perception
is important. And I think, you know, I think I have the ability to lead with certain parts of myself that are less threatening. You know, I think it's something Michaela called out about me a few days into the game.
What did she say?
She said that she thought I was playing dumb based on my education and that I was smarter than I was coming across. I don't know why she said that to me in a sort of more attack. Said that to me in a bit of a pointed way. But I do think there's truth there. I think that, like, you know, I know how to, like, giggle at Jeff Probst and be goofy. And then next thing you know, you're on the jury. I think too, it's telling that in the pregame press coming out of my season, there were so many people, not so many, let me not exaggerate. There were a few specific people that used the word hurt when they described getting voted out by me. And I think that's because I built these, like, personal relationships leading with goofiness and personal things so that when, you know, I outmaneuvered or outplayed someone, they felt hurt by it, as opposed to, you know, other people where it felt more strategic. You know, I've talked a lot with my doppelganger about this.
Yes, with Aubrey.
With Aubrey about it.
You know, and I want to go back to the gender discussion, because I think that this is an interesting topic in terms of, basically, you're saying that a tool that you have in your arsenal is the ability to disarm so that people can underestimate you. And we talk about this a lot in terms of the moms of Survivor. And Dawn is the great example of this, where she's somebody that people feel at ease with. There's whether it's something that she intentionally gives off or just something that, you know, she is. People feel like, oh, I can trust this person.
Yeah.
And then when you get betrayed by that person. But I think it's interesting that somebody like Cochran, and maybe it's, but he's also somebody who is a very disarming person.
Yeah.
And I think that he certainly has those qualities, but he ends up winning 9-0 or 10-0 in a season.
Oh my God, I just interrupted you.
That's fine.
I don't want to quote someone without their permission, but I'm going to do it. When I first got off the game, I had coffee with Sophie Clark. And we were walking around, and I didn't spoil what happened in my season, but she flat out said a female Cochran doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I'm not accused, and I want to be clear, I'm not accusing anyone of anything. You know, I talked to Will when I got out of the game, like, the day after, and I was like, do you think, like, there's some sort of level of gender stuff here? And he said, no, absolutely not. And then weeks or maybe like a month later, he called me, and we were talking, and he was like, you know, I felt defensive, like you were accusing me of something, but I can see how certain things played into this.
And Sophie is certainly not a female Cochran.
No, not at all.
Sophie is, in a lot of ways, is sort of like the opposite of Cochran, where she's just sort of like, no, it is what it is. And, you know, she's very, you know, confident in what she's saying at all times, and it has no self-doubt, almost seemingly. That maybe, you know, it's an interesting discussion, and there's no black and white answer to
this.
Can
I also say too, like, I made big mistakes my season that had nothing to do with gender bias, or I'm a person who very quickly blames myself instead of points fingers. So I fully acknowledge that I made many mistakes beyond any sort of bias, any sort of misperception. But I do think that, like, beyond a specific move that I could have made differently, that I may or may not have replayed in my head a million times coming home, I do think that underestimating perception
was a problem. What's that specific move? Are we talking about the final five at the point where...
Actually, no, okay. Rob, we're not.
Okay. Well, that's that's good.
Is this going to be a guessing game?
I mean, you're overestimating my ability to remember
millennials
versus Gen X at a moment's notice.
The reason I don't think I need to delve into it is because I think I've later come to realize in the months after that you try to make a different decision, you try to move in a different direction. It's not as simple as this happens and then this, and this will happen. Everything is different. You step on a stick. If you go back in time and step on a stick, the dinosaurs don't die.
Mm-hmm. Sure. The butterfly effect.
There's a butterfly effect. I think that, I think it's a very complicated thing.
Survivor is a complicated game.
It is. Yeah.
Could we talk about that rock draw that you went through?
Let's do it, Rob.
Where it goes and... It's a 5-5 vote, and I believe it's you mm-hmm. and Zeke.
Yeah. So here's the funny thing I want to preface this with, and maybe this colors in the light of everything that's happening in my friendship with Zeke. Zeke and I had a very close relationship on Millennials versus Gen X. America only got to see our breakups. They never got to see the sort of love and camaraderie we had.
Right.
Yeah. Like Zeke and I would go down to the beach and we'd do cocktails. Which is, we were just like, similar to prayer time with Michelle. We would talk through things. But Zeke and I had a cocktails the night before a rock draw.
Rocktails.
We did a little bit of rocktails. And I got a lot of heat for my bad poker face. But Zeke and I had cocktails that night. And we realized for the first time ever, we had different directions that we wanted to go in.
Yeah.
We had always been on the same page of, no, we need to target Jay's allies. We need to get Taylor. We always knew what we were doing. We got to this moment where we realized if we went in one direction, Zeke would be more in control of things. He had the stronger allies. If we went in another direction, I would have more of the sway and the control just based on how the relationships were playing out. And we realized we were going in different directions. And we were like, oh my goodness. I've lost what your specific question was about this.
We're talking about the rock draw. So,
right. So
yes.
This was this sort of, you know, Zeke and I had gone in different directions. And so, the rock draw is very complicated. And it's complicated by idols and mis-idol plays. And I had it. My gut told me that I was getting that the votes were coming my way because they didn't think I had an idol because they weren't going to target Dave, who definitely, you know, had some sort of idol. I told Dave right before we went out, I said, there are 5 votes coming my way. You need to play your idol for me. I went out to the beach and I said, Dave, and I calmed down suddenly because I was like, I know there are 5 votes coming to me. Dave needs to play his idol for me. And I was like, if he plays his idol for me, the votes don't count. Zeke goes home. But yeah, we got to tribal and similar to many tribals our season, discussions were very quickly happening. Lots of names were being thrown around. In the confusion of it all, the idol was misplayed, and the rest is history. Ask me specific questions, though, because I think that was a rambling answer that audiences already know.
It's a good start. Do you feel like that if you guys knew you could run around and whisper to each other at tribal council, like we saw at the combined tribal council, would that have been occurring?
Probably huddles would have definitely been occurring if we had watched the huddle episode first. No, listen, I mean... Going for me and Adam to choose to go with Dave and company had to do with many things. But one of them was that Dave had an idol. And I really felt like we could play the idol correctly. Dave, I mean, there were many reasons in which I went in direction of Dave. A big reason was Ken. I knew that Ken would go an hour long.
Who you had a big crush on.
Let's talk about conspiracy theories and what is, you know, what. No, I knew that Ken is someone who would go on hour-long rambles about trust and all this stuff. And I knew that Ken was someone that I could beat at the end. You also have to understand that, like, for whatever revisionist history happened afterwards of people saying, well, why did Hannah, you know, go against us or flip on us. You know, the group of people, you know, Zeke and company we're going with, were a bunch of people that had just blindsided me by a vote. And it's very complicated. I feel like none of this is coherent.
No, it's good.
But yeah, that Rock Tribal was very intense. I still remember it was even more intense than you saw. I mean, Zeke has this ability to, Zeke just had the ability to get a bunch of people who he had voted against to put their hands in a bag of rocks for him.
But you're somebody who, you know, was very vocal about their anxiety during the season.
Yeah.
How were you able to maintain your composure during a 5-5 vote when there are five people voting for you?
Well, that I can answer. Okay, so the thing people at home have to understand, anxiety or no anxiety, your nightmare is your name written down on the piece of paper. They set it up so that getting voted out is death. You know, the bridge that you walk off of, it goes dark. You can't see where it ends. And so you're constantly playing from a place of, I just can't get my name to come up on that paper. So when I saw my name on the paper, a calm washed over me because I knew that the idol should have been played for me. I knew I had made a mistake and I was facing the consequences. And I've never felt more calm than when I saw my name come on that paper. And then when it was tied, I knew the people I had to give my plea to. It just walking on and seeing death was much different than this hypothetical of it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, too,
you live the worst case scenario.
You do. And then the next day, I was on the bottom for the first time in the whole game because I had been sort of on the bottom of alliances occasionally, but I had never been so truly on the bottom. And I've never felt so calm in the game. Because when you're playing from the top, you're sort of building this stack of puzzle pieces and you're constantly afraid it's going to all fall down. When you're playing from the bottom, you sort of got nothing. You don't have much to lose.
Yeah, that's what they say. When you're at the bottom, you do have nothing to lose.
I told Dave at the time, I was like, we're going to make sweatpants that say bottom dwellers on the butt.
Bottom dwellers. Whoa. Okay. And then ultimately, you didn't have to pick a rock. Would you, if you had to stick your hand into the bag of rocks, though, would you have just passed out or you think you could have handled that?
Zeke and I have discussed this.
Yes.
Would we have stuck our hand in a bag of rocks out of respect for the people that stuck their hands in a bag of rocks for us?
You would not. You would not.
Rocks is a bold move.
Yes. See, I feel like it's easier for you.
Can I say that? I think certain things in the game are circumstantial and I do not want to claim to be willing to not do something or do something in retrospect. Yeah, stick your hand in a bag. I mean, Adam stuck his hand in a bag of rocks with an idol in his pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, that is it's.
Hey, that's how you win.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, make a big move. Why not? I mean, I can understand where you're coming from. I think that would have been a really bold move for Zeke to make to not go to rocks for the people that were like his alliance. He's like the leader of those people.
I am not Zeke's publicist. As I've said, I am his friend and I love him dearly. But, you know,
okay.
I really do feel like Zeke's publicist on this podcast. I feel like, you know, anything that you don't like that I've said on this podcast should be directly criticized towards Zeke.
Okay. You got it.
Let's
take some questions from the listeners of this podcast.
Let's
I have some
this.
Questions for you. Okay.
Do you have their name like attached to the question? Is that how this works?
Yeah. I have
cool.
They're not like blind items. Like people would ask horrible questions if I didn't just give their name. Yeah. All right. Edward Morris wants to say yay or nay on props at Tribal. Now, I know you do a lot
props?
Of props, like Michaela brought the coffee cup. Now, you're an improv comedian.
I am.
There's no props in improv, correct?
There isn't, correct.
Right?
That is wow, look at you, Rob.
Yeah, it's a
Survivor
lot.
Survivor expert, improv expert.
Yes.
Rounding it
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's a lot of space work going on. That do you think that was a cheat for Michaela to bring a prop with her to the Tribal Council?
It's not cheating, for sure.
As a comedian,
was it cheating? I would have loved to see Michaela mime mime sipping tea. I think that would have really been even more sort of
like
pointed.
With her pinky out. Yeah.
But imagine this, Rob. Imagine she brings the prop. She puts the water in her mouth, and then Sandra is lying to her, not JT. Imagine the spit take we get.
Yeah.
That is the comedy we miss. So thank you, Edmo, for the question.
That would have been the blind side to remember, though.
Yeah, she would have spit water out.
Dropped the coffee cup.
It would have shattered. Then she would have walked over the glass. There would have been blood everywhere. It would have been really gruesome.
Yeah, she would have turned around to Sandra. Did you do that? She's like, yeah.
I will say, I have been at a tribal where Michaela gets blindsided. It is intense.
Okay, well, let's talk about it. We're talking about some of these greatest hits from Millennials versus Gen X.
I almost forgot
about that you were there. What was that like going through? You were also blindsided. You had an epic blindside face with that when Jay ends up with Will flipping his vote against Michaela.
Yeah, I mean, going into that tribal, I knew, again, this is where I think even me, a little revisionist history, but I had a feeling that there was something up. I remember Will and Jay went into the woods for about an hour. They came back. I said, Will, shoot it to me straight. What's going on? He said, oh, we're just confirming the vote.
Mm-hmm.
He was gone for an hour. So my gut told me something was up, but it didn't make sense, the vote before the merge, to isolate me. I think this is where, you know, certain players may have underestimated my willingness to, you know, kind of make some moves and not just like sit and like be cool with being blindsided. So at that tribal, I've never felt so sick to my stomach. Like, honest to God, after the vote, while we were waiting for the votes to be counted, I thought something is up. So when I saw Michaela's name, I was sort of like, oh my goodness, I knew it. I can't believe I didn't listen to my gut. And then I thought, okay, this isn't me. And then the shock, and then my jaw drops, and then Michaela sort of reacts to the betrayal of, you know, her and Jay were very tight. But, you know, Jay didn't flip on her because he's a dude. He made a move.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I get it. I get it. Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. says, if a trust cluster is not a game-changing strategy, then I'm not sure what is. Hashtag Rob.
Wait, what's the guy's name?
Michael.
Michael, thank you so much.
Yes.
I'm currently single. Let's go out and talk trust cluster. I'm just kidding. Thinking
about which part? About being single?
Not kidding about the being single.
So Michael wants to know if a trust cluster is not a game-changing strategy. I don't mean to ask it in a double negative way.
Wait, what is the question part of this?
Basically, he's saying, why aren't you on the game changers? Didn't you invent trust clusters?
Michael, I'm going to describe to you my body when I left Survivor 33, because I've talked about dating you at this. I was emaciated. I was 22 pounds underweight. And if they had asked me to go on to game changers, I would have died on day two because I would have withered away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there was no possibility to become a game changer, nor that I think I have earned the title of game changer.
Well, I don't know necessarily if earning the title of game changer is a prerequisite to being a Survivor game changer, just for the record. Okay, so just to go back to the being single thing. Would you ever consider dating a Survivor, or is that something that is not interesting in the least to you?
Oh man, this is like a date. Would I date a Survivor?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have somebody in mind.
Well, we're all a little bit crazy, so that would be a lot for one couple. But certain couples make it work.
Certain couples make it work. I don't think I could do it. I think you need one person who is not sort of like reading Twitter all the time and very fixated.
I mean, listen, like, would I go on a date with John Cochran? Yes. But I'm just kidding. I don't know what I'm saying.
All right.
Now I'm just really trying to get.
So for some people, it's a complete like, hell no, absolutely not.
Listen, love is love is love is love. We're all too crazy to date each other, but it happens.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Doesn't stop people.
These questions are fun, Rob.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Ask me more. These are real fun.
I'm glad that you like them. Shayna James wants to know.
What a name. Shayna James. All right.
What is your favorite / funniest memory from the Millennials versus Gen X finale Vegas? Nobody has told any stories from this. They give me the what happens in exile stays on exile. Okay. So, yeah, we want some stories.
You want some stories. oh, man. Well, Vegas was a special time for our cast.
Yeah. I mean, no other cast, I don't think, has ever done this. Not even the Dirty 30, I think, has ever just immediately right after the finale said, we're going on the road.
Well, there are so many moments. My goodness. I'm trying to figure out what I can actually talk about on a podcast.
I mean, you had what? How many people from the cast ended up going to Vegas?
A bunch. 13? See, it was, I don't want to miss people by accident. So
you don't
sorry
have to give us the names, but yeah, just in terms of the
large percentage of our cast all went to Vegas immediately after the finale to sort of hang out and celebrate the sort of being done with, for most of us, being done with our portion of being on national television.
And Adam Klein paid for everybody?
I can either confirm or deny that. I feel like that may be illegal on some level of some contract. But, you know, Adam is a generous man. But yes. We just had so much fun. This was sort of the birth of my one true love, Heek.
Yes.
I tried Pai Gow.
Yes. How did that go?
Zeke and I we're playing Pai Gow all day long. We're having so much fun. And at the end of the day, Zeke goes, "You know, you've been competitive with me all day." That was when Zeke and I realized we probably shouldn't play.
Gamble.
Probably shouldn't gamble against each other. But no, a fan bought us into Pai Gow. It was so much fun.
What do you mean they bought you into it?
A fan came up to Zeke and I and said, we want to buy you your starter chips. Come play Pai Gow with us. And it's an incredibly fun game in which the dealer helps you out. I had never gambled before. We went to a club.
Yeah.
Can you imagine me in a club?
Yeah.
Rob?
You're a millennial.
It was terrifying. I walked into this club and there was a woman in a box.
Yes.
That's when I knew I was out of my comfort zone.
Like a magic trick? Like she was going to get sawed in half?
I believe she was sort of like on display.
Okay.
I think. And I thought, this is not my jam. And so I was clubbing that night. So I have been to a club for those in, you know, my life who think that I can't club. I don't know. Here's the thing. Here's the reason we went to Vegas. And here's the thing about Survivor 33. Again, in light, and not to bring it back to the recent events of last night and everything. But, you know, we genuinely had fun with each other out on the island. I mean, like, there are so many moments that you don't see that in which we just had a blast with each other. Like, you're on camera most of the time when you're on Survivor, but there was a moment where we were getting palm fronds and Zeke and I were off camera and you're not allowed to sing on camera because of copyright things. But Zeke and I just, you know, sang show tunes. Will and I was there for Will Wall's first snorkeling experience in which he said, "Hannah, will you stay with me? Because I don't swim that well." I said, "Okay." And he tried to, dive underwater, but the snorkel filled up with water.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up and goes, "Hannah, why didn't that work?" I said, "Well, it was much lower." Like, "Hannah, why did that work?"
Yeah.
And I said, "You have to like let it, you have to have the snorkel sticking out." And so he does it. And I just hear Will giggling. Like there are just, Will and I, after the game, we had both lost the helicopter reward. We made a pact that if we lost that reward, and as we watched Brett and Sunday and Dave and Zeke wave at us, we said, we'll do a helicopter out of the game. Will and I helicoptered in New York. The thing, what Vegas is that our cast were filled with super fans who love this game, but also genuinely liked playing with each other, especially that post-merge game.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone from the merge on had just like a love of the game, a super fan-ness. And again, I don't want to bring it back to the events of what happened, but like, you know, there is a way to play Survivor with like love and compassion, still hardcore and still fighting, that, you know, there's, Survivor can be a beautiful thing in which you leave with this sort of family you never expected to have.
Yeah. And just to go back to the idea of, I think it can be that in a first time player season, because I think that a lot of what happened last night came out of Jeff had sort of this desperation about him, and it was a desperation of, this is my third time. I need to make the jury. I need to be there. And you know that I can't be a person who played the game three times, and I will do anything to do that. And I don't think the first time player has that. It's like, this is a life changing experience that I did. Oh, you know, it's a bummer I didn't make the jury, but I'm not going to, you know, that there are links that I will go to
yeah,
to be in this game. And I'm sure people in your cast that didn't make the jury are disappointed, but they're, you know, it's not like they're not filled with the regret that you have to on a second and a third time.
I mean, obviously there's no excuse for crossing lines that were crossed. I just think that, like, knowing my own, all the stuff that I've processed coming off Survivor, and there is so much growth and process that happens off the show. Imagining going into the next game with all of that, it's just a different
ball
game.
Same. It's not the same. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to make an excuse. I'm just trying to say that's where I think that the desperate mindset is coming from, more so than somebody who plays the first time. And then it's like, what was going to happen? You know, I come out there, let me roll the dice and see what happens.
You know what my goal was going into our season?
What's that?
I said, I want one person on the internet to say she's funny looking, but I'd date her.
Whoa. Did it happen?
It did.
Okay.
Goal achieved.
My goal was that I figured I was going to get voted off really early, but I said, I'll get to go to the parties. That I was like, okay, but then I'll get to meet all of the different survivors.
I was a super fan. Being a little more serious on the whole goal thing, I was just such a fan of Survivor. And my goal was to be a part of the storytelling of the show.
Yeah.
My favorite player is Courtney Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know this, I don't know if this makes sense with my archetype and my character. I love Courtney's confessionals, her role in the storytelling of Survivor. She is, like, hands down my favorite player. I just wanted to get to be a voice that told the story.
Does she know that?
I guess she does now when she listens to all 2 hours of this podcast.
Oh, yeah, because she listens to every podcast.
No, but I really wanted... The thing about Survivor, though, that is so mind-boggling is your goals shift out there.
Yeah.
I went in and, you know, again, phases. You're like, I don't want to be the first person off my tribe. I want to build relationships. Oh, my God. We're getting close to a merge. Imagine getting to come out all cute and be on the jury and do this. Okay, we're in the merge. Hold on a sec. There aren't that many people here. I've been playing really hard. Everyone, like Fishback says, is the protagonist of their own narrative. Oh my God, I'm the hero. This is mine. I got this. Oh my God, there's so few. I'm going to win. If I don't win, then I'm a loser. And suddenly your mindset is, if I don't win, I have failed. But that is not the initial mindset going into a newbie season.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point where you just have like these moving goalposts.
Yeah,
really, my best case scenario was going to be like, OK, I'm going to go on Survivor and I'm going to not die. And then I'll get to be Billy Garcia. I will just get to go I was going to be Billy Garcia before there was Billy Garcia. I'll just be the guy and I'll just go to everything. And I'll say, look, no. I was on the show. I was out there.
There is proof. In doing an article for about Ozzy's hairstyles throughout his career.
Yes.
I rewatched part of the Billy Garcia thing. I was like, all right, they threw a challenge. This is all very, they threw a challenge to get off Billy Garcia. But he seems to be a lovely, super fan of the community.
The loveliest.
Okay. I've never met him, but yes. Ask me more.
Aubra wants to know.
Aubra.
Not Aubrey. Aubra Pian wants to know, do you feel like your game was edited fairly? What didn't we get to see that you wish we did? Now, you talked about how the people that ended up going on the jury and the people that you played with perceived you. But what about the edit of the show? Did you feel like that painted an accurate picture of your game?
I'll say this to start this. I think I'm very lucky. I think that my character and who I was portrayed accurately. I think that, you know, you go on and I went on the show because this is shocking breaking news on Robert's podcast. I am not a barista.
What?
I know.
Like Michaela.
I basically before the show was working in production and my job before going on was working.
What did you do in production?
So my job before going on Survivor is I worked for story producers. Do you know what those are?
On reality shows.
On a reality show.
Okay.
I was a story assistant.
On what reality show can you say?
I guess I can say I worked on this show called Famously Single.
Okay.
It was about a bunch of famous people living in a loft. My job now is neither. I write for Bustle, which is an online magazine. And I'm also a freelance journalist for Mike.com. So I'm now a paid journalist, which is really incredible. But that's a whole other thing.
No, beats the hell out of unpaid journalists.
So much better to get money. Okay. Here's the thing about money. Like the world's not about money, but it's pretty great. to take like 10 $1 bills and just throw them in the air.
Yeah.
That 10? feels I mean, I'm not
going to make it rain.
I'm a Jew. I'm not going to throw too much money away. These Jew jokes are not going to read to the general audience. No, but so before I went on the show,
you're playing to the base here after an hour and a half.
Oh my God. If you are still with us, then get ready for some Jew jokes.
All right. Take it easy.
I'm sorry. No,
save
that
it
was,
for Seder.
You realize that that's what Adam and I would say on day 39. We go, two Jews?
Yes. I remember you said that on the red carpet.
Oh, God. I say too much on red carpet. This is why I'm lucky with my edit. No, I thought about the worst case scenario of how they could portray me. What I could do. I'm like, well, you know, I'm not, you know, it would be hard to, you know, cut me together as a, you know, racist, homophobic, anything super. But I thought, okay, they could probably show me and a little bit of my lack of social skills. Mm-hmm. You know, worst case scenario, someone is like, this annoying big nose bitch. Like, ooh, that was, sorry. But yeah, so I think I'm thankful of how it played out. I do think that some of my portrayal was more intentional and more thought out than people realize. I think that leading with goofiness or leading with certain parts of my personality that aren't fake, but are, I led with giggling at Jeff Probst more than here's how I see the world. You know, strong women, I mean, not to bring it back to a gender thing, do get targeted. Jessica was always a target at the Merge, who was very open about being a strong, smart woman. So I think I wonder how much of the intentionality of how I was coming across came across. But, you know, I don't have a right to complain, I think, about my edit. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Rob, what do you think, having met me now and talked to me for an hour and a half?
Well, I noticed that you talk about yourself almost in the third person when you talk about my character. My character on the show. And I feel like that when I hear that, it's almost like a separation of the person that you saw isn't me. That you saw my character, but I am a different person than who you got to know on the show.
Can I clarify that?
And that can mean one of two things.
Yeah, okay.
Either I was unhappy with how I was portrayed, or I'm happy. I don't mind how I was portrayed, but that's not me. I did things that I wouldn't do in my real life.
I appreciate you following up that, because that's not the intention. I was talking to Aubrey about how when you refer to yourself in the third person, you become a crazy person. Mm-hmm. So I in no way want to do that. But it's actually neither of those things. It's not that I'm unhappy with my edit or that I don't see it as a version of myself. I just think you become this two-dimensional version of yourself. It is a version of who you are. There are parts of your personality that are highlighted, that are heightened. The sort of mass commentary on your character and your moves and whatever, there sort of has to be some sort of separation and understanding that to the people at home, you are a two-dimensional person on their screen that they feel they have the right to comment on. But it is, I mean, I refer to my time on Survivor as sort of like a version of myself. But no, it's, I think what was portrayed was me, it felt like I was watching myself. I just think, you know, you can't see all the game intent behind what you're doing all the time, to answer your first question. Does that make any sense, or is that really rambling?
You're making a lot of sense.
Okay, great.
What was your family's reaction to you being on the show?
Well, when I was 14,
yes,
I would watch Survivor with my friend Taylor. We would crush up Oreos and put gummy worms in it. And
not Figgy's Bay. The person that was on your millennial tribe that had a baby.
Not Figgy's Bay? Wait, what?
Do you remember when you were on Millennials versus Gen X and there was a girl named Figgy and there was a guy named Taylor?
Yeah, but I know who you're talking about. How does that reference what I'm talking about?
Okay. And that you said you had a friend named Taylor.
Oh my God. Taylor and Taylor. How did I not see that?
And sometimes other millennials refer to a significant other as their bae.
I fully understand what you just said. I forgot for a sec that I just said the word, I just said the name Taylor and you said Taylor. I was like, how does this connect to Figgy and Taylor?
Yes.
Not Tattoo Taylor, whose baby is adorable, by the way. He's got like little arm rolls. He's real cute.
Yeah.
Taylor's living it up as a stay-at-home dad. He's really doing great.
Whoa.
Just for a Taylor update. No, but
nothing more millennial than a stay-at-home dad.
No, my parents. So when I was 14, I would hang out with my friend Taylor, not the Taylor I'd later meet on an island. We would watch the show, and I would tell my dad, like, I'm going to be on the show. And he's like, sure. He's like, Survivor's going to be done by then. Then I apply to colleges.
That's what they all say.
I know. I apply to colleges. My Common App essay is, I'm going to be on Survivor, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, you know, my parents were like, ha-ha. I take Dawson's class.
Yes.
In which he splits the class into tribes. We compete for immunity on the midterm. It's all about Survivor. It's Max Dawson's Survivor class. Even then, my parents were like, ha-ha. But then something clicked in my head. I was like, oh, this is getting kind of narrative-y. But every step of the way, I thought it was as full circle as it was going to get. Like, even I was like, there's no way I'm just like, isn't it funny? This class, I remember talking to someone about the class. I was like, this is as full circle as it gets. And then I moved to LA and I tweeted at Dawson because his class was also about social media and stuff. And he didn't respond. And I messaged him. I was like, every time you don't respond, I think you're on Survivor. He comes back and for contractual reasons, he may or may not have told me he had just been on Survivor and that he wanted me to be on the show. Even then, I was like, ha ha ha. But no, when I started getting close with the casting stuff, my parents were like, holy moly.
Did he put in a word for you or you applied on your own?
I applied. I went to the premiere party of Worlds Apart and met a casting agent there. I got her card. And this is actually a bit of a story. I emailed her a very polite, professional, Northwestern style email. Didn't hear back. But then she called me about a year later. They had cast someone named Aubrey Bracco. They were afraid I was a little similar. And she called me. She said, we're casting again. She emailed me. She said, we're casting again. I said, okay, Hannah, you got to. Oh, my God. I just talked about myself in the third person. I am becoming a crazy person.
Crazy person. You're there.
I'm like, okay, you have to take the cap off. So I emailed her back and was like, you know, I just booty called my first boy and now you're emailing me. And she called me that night. And yeah, casting got started. But my parents were shocked. The whole time in casting, I was like, I'm not really going to do this. But then at the end of the day, I would just like giggle on the phone with my parents about meeting Jeff Probst and all this stuff. But yeah, this was sort of a long time coming. So I don't know if they had a specific like jaw drop moment. But yeah, we definitely all thought I was going home. My parents have supported and believed in me my whole life. They did not believe that I would be there for the family visit.
Yes. Okay. Well, you showed them.
These are the longest answers.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's what people like on a podcast.
Hope so.
Okay. I hope so, too. So, Laura Kathleen says, looks aside, does your game echo Aubrey's from your first season? Now, you guys are friends. Can you talk about how you got to be friends with Aubrey?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say, for those who will accuse me of this, for that 1% of people that will, who are still with us in the podcast, I don't claim to have played as good a game as Aubrey. I think Aubrey played a brilliant game. Aubrey ended up at the end with the right people that she needed to end up with. I think there is a scenario where a similar thing with me happens where I make certain different decisions and end up in a situation like Aubrey did where it's the girl who was strategic against you versus maybe someone who was kinder to you. And I have no pretend to know exactly what happened in Koh Rong either. But, you know, I think we definitely have some shared experiences about learning about perception, playing hard, leading with certain things versus not other things that we can relate on. Aubrey and I just sort of have an understanding with each other about certain elements of Survivor and perception. How we became friends. I met Aubrey the day after I got back from Survivor 33. I was one day out of the game and Aubrey was about to go to 34 and it was just after her finale. And I was a crazy person. Like, I got given a menu of Indian food that night and someone said, click anything you want. And I clicked every single thing on the menu and had to go back and unedit it. So I had only met Aubrey once, but we exchanged numbers. And once she got back from 34, Aubrey was, having only met me once, was extremely kind. Whether or not we have similarities in our game, we have the shared experience of making it 39 days and not winning, which is a very specific experience. Mm-hmm. And we just started talking and became good friends, having only met once. And she was in town recently, and she's a lovely person who I think, you know, she's just as lovely and kind of cool as you want her to be. She's great.
I agree.
I'm good.
Yeah. How about that? John Johnson wants to know.
John Johnson?
Yes.
Oh my God. John Johnson.
Are you still thinking about puppies and butts? You know, you and I have spoken a couple of times now. I have to say, I can never recall you once mentioning either puppies or butts.
No, I mentioned a butt on this podcast. I said that Dave and I almost got bottom dwellers on our butts.
Oh, yes, that's true. I thought you said lower back. We'll have to check.
We'll check there. Do I still talk about puppies and butts? Well.
Did you ever talk about them or did Mari misrepresent you?
No, I think this is a very clear example of I led with a certain part of myself that allowed a certain perception to be out there about me. You know, I also just enjoyed being goofy. The Millennial Tribe was a great bunch of people. We were all goofy. The first night that Gen X went to Tribal Council, do you know what we did, Rob?
What's that?
We played Dirty Charades.
Dirty Charades.
We made a big bonfire and we played Dirty Charades.
Yeah. So is that like 2 and 3 word phrases? I feel like I don't know enough dirty phrases to play Dirty Charades.
I mean, I feel like what happens in the Millennial Beach has to be protected a bit. But like Michelle is good at Dirty Charades.
Yes.
For a Bible translator. You
yeah.
know?
Well, I think that she does have that streak in her. I mean, she had like a
Michelle have a wild side.
She has a great moment in one of in the Ponderosa videos where everybody makes up like their fake job. Yeah. Did they do that to you on day 39?
So I got, they were a little kinder to the final three because we had just kind of been through the ringer. But
and she says her fake job is that she's a prostitute.
Some stripper or something?
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Come on, Rob.
Sorry.
Let's not subject her to fake sex.
Got it.
No, when I did get there, there was a bit of murmurs of that. I do remember sitting next to Zeke, and Zeke was like, I'm not an NYU food writer. I went to Harvard, and I do finance. But yeah, some people were lying about their job. No, some people were lying about the lies that they... It all got really confusing at Ponderosa.
Okay. David Baltazar wants to ask...
These names are so good.
It was mentioned that you once sent an email to Josh Wigler asking for career advice in TV journalism. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get advice from Josh? Did he steer you in the right direction?
So I got Josh Wigler's email from a mutual friend because I was like, oh my goodness, to get to be a journalist and get to talk about Survivor and cultural moments, isn't that the dream? And so I... Some weeks. I emailed Wigler a very friendly email, Rob. It had smiley faces in it. It was really lovely. And I said, I'd love any career advice. Josh Wigler is the most incredible person. I did not get a response from Josh Wigler. But I get to my pregame press, which for our season was in a hotel. I pick up the phone with Josh Wigler. The first thing he says is, I'm so sorry I never emailed you back. And I told him, I was like, I have to go on Survivor just to get career advice. No, Josh has given me really good career advice.
Yes.
Yeah. Josh has talked to me about, you know, building relationships at online magazines and proving that you can write. And then from there, you know, building other articles. Josh is, as I'm sure you know, is one of the most wonderful people in the Survivor press gang.
The most wonderful.
I'm with you. So I would agree.
Agree. Yeah. That's right.
Josh Wigler's the best.
Josh Wigler's the best. Okay.
Okay.
Hannah, is there anything that we didn't cover today? We talked about some of the not so fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about some fun stuff. You could take a moment.
Take 15 minutes.
Do you like podcasting?
Yeah. I mean, this has been lovely with you, but you're sort of the king of this stuff, aren't you?
Oh, please. Well, don't give me too much credit.
I mean, I feel like a lesser podcaster, I would have had less fun talking about... A hateful episode of television.
Right. I mean, if we can make this fun, then what can't we do?
Oh, man. Win Survivor? Yeah, too soon?
Well, yeah.
Hold on. Let me think if there's anything.
So talk to me about, so what do you do these days?
What do I do? Well, I do a lot.
Besides not being a barista, not making the Michaela special, 7 drops of coffee and a teaspoon of sugar.
I did barista for a month.
Okay.
Of my life. I've been writing articles for Bustle. Anyone can go there to Bustle.
What do you write about?
Mostly entertainment journalism, television, some Bachelor stuff, you know.
Yes. Okay.
And then for Mike, I've been doing Survivor recaps every week.
M-I-C.
M-I-C.com. My Survivor recaps talk a lot about my own personal experiences as they relate to each episode. I try to weave in some of that good inside info. And then, yeah, I've been writing some other Survivor related and other entertainment journalism related articles. I also, I do sketch comedy. I write it.
Tell me about what's going on with UCB.
Yeah. So Upright Citizens Brigade is a comedy theater in Los Angeles.
Yes.
It was started by Amy Poehler and a bunch of dudes.
Yes.
And,
I took an improv class there last year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy your experience?
I did. It was just that it's not the most convenient place in the world for me to get to based on where I live.
Yes.
And it's a time commitment to go and do a couple of hours. Like I was taking a class like Tuesday, Thursday nights, basically like 4 to 7. And I did it in the Survivor off season, but you know, it's tough to get away. But I did enjoy the experience of taking the 101.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's a great community. It's sort of like a grad school of comedy stuff. So I write on a sketch team there. It's called the Mod Team. My team's the New Deal. I'm one of, there's 6 writers and 6 actors, and I'm a writer. Yeah. And I
would love to come out and see your show.
You're officially invited.
Okay,
to the next
good.
New Deal show.
Great.
Yeah, it's really fun. We perform once a month, first Wednesday of every month. And it's so much fun to write sketch comedy.
Do you do improv as well or just sketch?
I did improv for a long time. I sometimes do improv still. I'm a lot more focused on writing these days. But I did do an improv show recently and had a blast. We're all a little kooky. And
what kind of sketch? Like sort of like character stuff, or you do topical?
It's a mixture of all of it. So we have 6 actors we write for. So we've been together over a year now. So I really have learned to write for specific actors and write characters for them. Game stuff. I wrote when I got back from Survivor, I wrote a sketch about a dude who had just come back from being kidnapped and didn't know how to act in society. And I'm not saying it was a PTSD sketch based on my Survivor experience. I'm just saying it was a PTSD sketch based on my Survivor experience.
Okay. I like it. Sounds very fun. All right. We need a hashtag for this episode. Is it hashtag bottom dwellers? Is that an open and shut case?
For this episode? Well, shouldn't we? Is it not about the episode of TV we just watch usually?
Well, it's really about this conversation. Usually I give out a hashtag for people at the end. So you feel like that we need to do something more serious? I like to give out a hashtag for somebody that makes it to the end of the podcast. It's sort of just hey, let us know that you hit this mark in the podcast.
Oh, man. Can I get a second?
You can get it as long as you want. With the magic of editing.
Oh, man. I'm just going to take an hour and you guys... yes. Can you see now, Rob, how I spent 15 minutes in a voting booth?
Yes. If we come back and now Rob is like suddenly like very testy, like, all right, Hannah, what is it? Have you thought about it?
All my hashtags are so bad in my head.
Well, what are they?
I think
is this like one of these Michelle Charade hashtags?
Oh, goodness. Oh my God, Hannah actually did a podcast, even though she was never going to do a podcast. Semicolon.
I mean,
metamorphosis. Semicolon.
Yeah, that's a long hashtag.
Semicolon. I feel like it should pay homage to the sort of important moment that my best friend just went through on TV.
What do you want to say?
God, I mean, his hashtag is hashtag Zeke Viver.
Zeke Viver. Okay.
I think that's it. Z-E-K-E and then Viver.
Okay. There you go. Hashtag Zeke Viver.
We did it. We did a podcast.
We did a podcast and very excited. Now, the problem with that is that we won't know necessarily if somebody's tweeting about Zeke Viver if they finished listening to this podcast.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Fine.
But I guess if they're tweeting it to me and you, I guess we'll know.
Fine. Hashtag bottom dwellers. Are we going to go with bottom dwellers?
No. Well, let's just so if it goes to us, then we'll know. Then we'll know. Okay?
Okay.
If it's a trending topic, then I guess it'll be muddled. So that'll be tricky.
But
this was so fun to have you out here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad that we had the opportunity. I certainly would have liked to have gotten you in, you know, right after the season. But this was a great time to do it as well.
Yes, I talked a lot about my Survivor game on this podcast.
Yeah, well, in that I'm sure that there will be some people who say we didn't talk enough about this week, but I like that, you know, we talked about sort of the unpleasantness and it was nice to be able to have something else to discuss as well.
I feel like so much of my experience with Zeke is also based in 33 and hopefully people understand that, you know, I wanted to talk about how much fun he was to play with him last season.
Yes. And I think
more than this one moment that we just saw last night.
We get that. We get that. Okay, so coming up next, we're going to have our voicemail podcast with Antonio Mazzaro. We're going to take your calls, and hopefully we will have some fun stuff to talk about with Antonio as well in that episode. You want to make sure you don't miss any of it. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments.
I'm looking forward to it too.
Okay, and I'm sorry. What's your Twitter?
Oh, at Hannah Lil Nessen, HannahLilNessen.
What's the background of
Hannah? Those are my first three names. My first three names are all palindromes, and my middle names are Lil and Nessen. If I was a rapper, I'd be Lil Nessen.
Okay, there you go.
It's just my first three names.
Yeah. All right. Look forward to hearing what you guys have to say. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
All right.